On Canucks Central, we're in the Mobile Kintec studio here at Rogers Arena. Canucks and Edmonton Oilers getting ready for the preseason finale. We will finally see JT Miller in the lineup tonight for Vancouver. So his first preseason game. Captain Quinn Hughes in the lineup as well for his second preseason game. So a lot to be excited about as the Canucks finally get their full roster together for a game tonight. It'll be interesting to see how all the pieces fit together finally, Sat.
Yeah, and I know people are kind of wondering whether they need to have the full lineup together for an entire game. I think of it more as having some players play together that are going to be on the same line. I'm not sure it really matters too much in terms of, you know, being able to roll lines for the team chemistry, so to speak. Does the fact that they're only going to have one game as a five-man unit to perhaps practice the power play, is that any concern at all in terms of trying to integrate a new player like DeBrusk into their power play and them getting off to a good start with a man advantage?
I don't feel like it is, because this power play, not to diminish what DeBrusk could bring, but, you know, they spent a lot of time last year not needing, you know, a big-time player in that bumper spot to have success through the first few months of the season, right? When it was Suter or whomever else to start the year on the power play, they were still clicking at an incredible pace. So even though they were one of the worst power plays in the league for the final third of the season, they still only dropped to 11th overall because they were so good. I think the chemistry that Besser, Miller, Hughes, and Pettersson have should be enough to get them to be off to a good start, and DeBrusk is just going to have to follow their lead as the season gets going. But it's a big part of the discussion today. We'll get to that and more in the Canucks Central Roundup, but let's kick it off with the Open.
Welcome to the Open.
That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
So once we finally get through the games that don't count in the standings, we'll get to the real thing, and it's next Wednesday. And so we're seeing a lot of the predictions and the analytic models start to release how they feel the Canucks are going to perform this year. And I don't know, this feels like a win for the Canucks, who have long been a team that analytic models have not liked very much, but as the Daily Hive has put out a few, the Athletic has the Canucks at 105 points. USA Today, the Canucks have 103-point projection there. Money Puck with a 101-point projection. Evolving Hockey also 101 points right there with the Edmonton Oilers at the top of the Pacific Division. And FanDuel is the one that is maybe least hyped about the Vancouver Canucks. They have them at 97 points. But basically, by every measure and every calculation, the analytic models feel similarly to how we've discussed the Canucks this offseason and leading into this year. They are a playoff team that can be viewed as a potential Stanley Cup contender.
Well, and if you look at guys they've added in terms of how they performed in certain roles last year, especially guys from the Boston team, they have great underlying numbers. So when you start projecting based on some of the metrics, it increased the Canucks' odds. And even though you may look at Forsberg and Desharnais and have questions about them being a pair and questions about the Canucks' defense as a whole, both players were really good, are really good penalty killers.
Yeah.
So when you start looking at and comparing certain guys that can play certain roles on the back end compared to last year, Zadorov's is certainly a better player than Forsberg and Desharnais. There's no question about it. But he's not a better penalty killer than those guys. So if you look at it from analytics again, their PK looks to be perhaps even better Mm-hmm. Right? And also with the guys they've added, DeBrusque, Sherwood, other guys have good numbers. They have speed. They can also help in terms of some weak spots in the bottom six, but also on the PK. So now all of a sudden you look at the numbers in terms of the additions they've made. They are a very strong analytical team. Does that mean anything necessarily? No, it comes down to how you play as a team, right? Like, and I think context matters a lot when you look at players and how they perform in different roles on different teams, and how's that going to look on this team?
Yeah.
That's my biggest question about, especially for Bourdais-Harnais, despite them being good penalty killers, what is their overall impact going to be? And as good as DeBrusque is numbers-wise, can he be that answer in the top six? And can he be a guy that can ride shotgun with Pettersson? I mean, that's what it comes down to, boiling it down to the most simplest form.
Yeah, I think this is not really told me anything new about how the Canucks are projecting for this season, right? I feel good about pretty much everything on the roster. I have my questions on defense. I have my questions in goal. How's it all going to look with Thatcher Demko? All of those things very valid. But, and this is where, like I joked with Josh when I first got to the rink today, and I said, well, this is probably a bad omen for the Canucks because last year, and we had this discussion, so like there is, not to make this an analytics versus like eye test debate or anything like that, but there can be a disconnect in some of the context of what is happening actually in the games versus what the numbers are showing. And some of that is still, especially the public available data sites, doesn't have the most accurate statistics for what is happening on the ice and what is considered a high danger chance, not to get too in the woods about it. But it's when the Canucks were on their run early last season and everybody was saying, oh, their PDO is too high, they're converting too much, nobody converts at this kind of a rate and doesn't see a drop off as the season goes on, you and I were a little bit more measured about it in saying, like, there's a lot of good things that are happening here with the Vancouver Canucks. Some stuff will normalize, but they should still be pretty good whenever that does happen. So for all the talk of, you know, analytics and what, how this matters and where we're going with this, now the Canucks are looked at as a great team. I agree wholeheartedly with what you said. Some of the players that they brought in, great analytics in other teams, in other situations, completely different context than what it might look like here. So that's why I always take any projection, whether good or bad, with a pretty big grain of salt.
And you know what? I like the optimism, to be honest, because the upside of this team is being a top 4 or 5 team in the league and being a legitimate cup contender. Like, that's the upside. That's a ceiling for this team, which I think is super exciting about it. Plus, whatever tweaks they can make in season to improve perhaps the defense or address any other needs. And to your point about, you know, the guys that enhance the projections because of their analytics, like, don't downplay how much a guy like Sprong gives a boost to those numbers, because his numbers are incredible, especially scoring rates and goals per 60 and points per 60, 5-on-5. Those rates are very valued when you look at projections. The question with him is he going to be an answer?
Yeah.
Because if he is, then that's huge. And same thing with DeBrusque. And I think that's what we're hopeful here in terms of individual players, and even Heinen to a lesser degree, right? He hasn't been talked about as much because maybe that ceiling isn't quite as high as what you see from Sprong and what you see from DeBrusque. But he's a complete player. And if you get these players, maybe not all of them, but a couple of them, to kind of have the career years a couple guys had for the Canucks last year, then that whole question about how does this team sustain its level and get better gets answered internally.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a question like Nils Höglander. Can he maintain a lot of the goal scoring that he had last year? It's going to be hard for him to do that because he shot over 20%. But if there's if he does come with some regression this year, does somebody else fill that void? Because the Canucks do have a deeper forward group, and they have other players that can potentially step up and score more than their bottom six did generally last year.
And I think, you know, you're right. And I think the other part of it, in terms of as far as how fans can feel about these things, it's that even though the Canucks have flaws, and we sit here and we microanalyze a team, it's our jobs, we talk about it 2 hours a day, so we go through everything consistently, right? But it's a really strong roster, but despite the holes, it's not a different roster than most teams in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something we discussed. Like, even look at Edmonton, for instance. As good as they are, and people have them as a favorite this year to win the Stanley Cup. That blue line has holes all of a sudden.
Yeah.
The depth kind of has been diminished, losing even Holloway, right? Now you don't have Kane to start the season. They made some nice additions, got Arvidsson, right? And they got Skinner up front. But how are they going to be as dominant, or are they going to have certain questions like Vancouver does, right? And same thing we mentioned about the Vegas Golden Knights. I love their defense. Goaltending should be fine. On the wings, you have enough scoring.
Yeah.
That's a question about that team. Dallas, you have some questions about their blue line, and now not having Pavelski, which young guy can step up. So you go through every one of these rosters. They all have flaws. And I think as far as Vancouver, they're not dissimilar. And that's why I really hesitate to say that they're too far down from even the best teams in the league. Like, you can say Edmonton's in its own tier, but I don't think any other team in the West is in a different tier from the Canucks. Like, I just don't think they're above the Canucks in a tier. Maybe Edmonton, if you want to make that argument.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it.
It's the Western Conference pretty level at the top, right? Like, of course, Canucks and as we've talked about, as I've said, I consider them kind of in a tier below Dallas and Edmonton, but right there with Vegas. Colorado, I've got questions about their depth, but their high end with McKinnon, McCarr, and obviously Rantanen is so good, you have to factor that into their projections. But, you know, I think the West is more wide open than some people think. And you know, the one thing is Edmonton coming off being a Stanley Cup finalist and making some pretty intriguing offseason moves. From all of the predictions and analysts that I've read through, it seems like they're being picked to be a cup winner this year.
Yeah.
And ultimately, like, that's not a state secret to anybody, right? Like, the way through the Western Conference is through Connor McDavid right now, and everybody knows it.
Yeah, and the Canucks, you know, they took Edmonton to seven games, and they came a Zadorov block shot away from perhaps going to overtime, and who knows what happens in the series. But at the same time, as much as we talk about the Canucks, and yeah, if you had Besser and Demko in that series, could it have been different? Yes. But in terms of how they play that series 5-on-5, oftentimes, there was a lot of hang on for life.
Yes.
Hang on for dear life for the Canucks too, right? And I think that's something that they have to still bridge between themselves and Edmonton, as much as, yes, you were right there. But when you take a real honest look at how the games went 5-on-5 oftentimes, and especially when Edmonton found that level you couldn't match, there's still a level of separation that you have to catch up to.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't have a problem with you saying Edmonton's in a different tier, even if their roster is flawed. But that's where Vancouver has to up their game. And a lot of it is the guys we talked about here, like, you know, Sprong and Nebrusk and the blue line. But like Yannick mentioned, ultimately it's number 40.
Yeah.
And these projections all have Pettersson playing at a near MVP level because that's what his trajectory has been. That's what he's being paid to be. That has to come through more than anything else.
Yeah.
Because that's a star maker. If he's at that level, do you have questions about DeBrusk? Probably not.
Yeah.
Does Sprong look better all of a sudden if Pettersson's dominating?
Probably, yeah.
Even if he has flaws, like, you kind of forget about
Does the power play click if Pettersson's going?
Right.
Probably.
So that's ultimately what it comes down to in a big, big way. And if he takes that step, then that kind of gap we saw between the Canucks and Edmonton, that gets bridged in a hurry.
Yeah. Pettersson, one goal in the 13 playoff games, as we know, had 17 points in the final 27 games of the season. Man, it feels like that conversation just won't go away. We talked about it towards the end of last year. Everything comes back around to Pettersson.
Yeah.
And it still kind of does.
It's like we have a main character every year, right? Like, it's like it all comes down to JT Miller. And then it's like now it all comes down to Elias Pettersson. And to some degrees this year, it all comes down to Thatcher Demko too, right?
100% on Demko. But you mentioned JT Miller. And Ian McIntyre does a great piece, as always, Well, IMAC always does great pieces. This one happens to be with JT Miller, should I phrase that correctly, and it's at sportsnet.ca. Miller is, I guess, front and center, like, as we talk about the analytics of it all, as we were just discussing, some of the projections. Miller is a regression candidate because his on-ice shooting percentage for the Canucks while he was on the ice was extremely high, something you don't see every day at 5-on-5. And so his numbers, while great at 5-on-5 last year, how much there is still a question, not in my mind, but a question from some others, how real was it last year from JT Miller? And ultimately, on this show, we've always felt pretty good about JT and what he's going to bring. He's been consistent since he got here. 11th best scorer in the National Hockey League since he became a Vancouver Canuck. But in this piece with IMAC, he again mentions, and it's something he's talked about for years, I don't care about the points. I want to be a better 200-foot player. So how do we view a strong JT Miller season, Seth?
I thought Yannick again nailed it. And as long as he's a point-per-game center and he makes a positive impact defensively, and by positive impact, we're talking about him having some real tough minutes. Like, he's going to, if not be the matchup center, he's going to play a lot of his 5-on-5 ice time against the opposition's best players. It's going to happen, right? Yeah. Whether they have a dedicated matchup line or not. And if he's a positive impact player defensively, playing that role, playing as big a minutes as any center in the league, and he's a point-per-game player, that's like ace. That, to me, that ace is your season.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like JT hasn't had a 99 point season before. It's not like, you know, but he,
while playing center.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not ludicrous to suggest he might be at a similar point total. It'd be 90 plus potentially. So 5-on-5, I do agree, it's probably going to come down a little bit, his scoring, but with the power play diminishing, does he make up a lot of that on the man advantage if the man advantage clicks?
Yeah.
And that's, I think, where you're going to see the overall raw point totals not go down significantly. But you're right. He shot 19.1%, which is a career high. He's usually around 14.9, 15%. So if he gets down to his career average, you know, he's probably going to score a handful fewer goals, but still be in the 30-goal range. Like, I don't think it's out of the question that he's a 90-point player and he's a positive impact defensive player. Like, that's what you're hoping to see. Now, if JT actually finds a way to legitimately become like an ace defensively,
yeah,
well, that changes the conversation entirely.
Yeah, and I don't know if he ever gets there necessarily, but I think last year, off the top of my head, the numbers were the Canucks outscored their opponents by like 16 goals with JT on the ice at 5-on-5.
And playing tough minutes, too.
Playing very tough minutes. If that stays around a plus 10, you're pretty happy.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if you're plus 5 even, playing those minutes
against, you know, taking Connor McDavid, taking Jack Eichel, when you play the Vegas Golden Knights, like all those big minutes, those are the minutes JT plays. If you win those minutes, man, like that's a win for the Canucks, right? And if you have that in your back pocket, that's going to help this team win games. But for as much as we've talked about Pettersson's line mates being better or projecting to be better with the additions of the offseason, does that not also apply to JT Miller?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, I'm as big a fan of Phil DiGiuseppe as anybody, but I recognize him as the starting left winger next to JT Miller and Brock Besser last year was not an ideal situation.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have Danton Heinen, you know, a guy who has scored over 40 points in the league, seems to have the ability to score more than 15 plus on a number of occasions. So, like, you've upgraded there, too. And I think those are some things that I think when we focus in on the individual player of JT Miller, for whatever reason, we've talked so much about Pettersson's line mates and how that's going to be a better situation. It should also apply to JT Miller in this conversation, because the Canucks have just overall really improved their forward group. The depth in the forward group, it's one of the reasons the projections are so strong.
Mm-hmm.
They have improved the forward group so much.
Yeah, they have one of the strongest forward groups in the league, right? And certainly in the Western Conference.
Yeah.
The question is going to ultimately be fits. Like, as much as we've penciled in right now, DeBrusk with Pettersson, right? And Sprong is going to get that look tonight, and we'll see how that kind of ultimately looks over the beginning part of the season, and hopefully it blossoms. And, you know, we've talked about Joshua and Garland being together with Suter or Bluger when both those guys are healthy. But we're not quite sure that's really going to be it either.
Yeah.
And that's going to be part of the season. But at least there are far more options. I mean, last year you got to the playoffs and it was like you ran out of ideas real quick. And it's not the fault of the coaching staff. I mean, you can only play guys you have.
Yeah.
You know, and we saw from Lekromäki, as good as he is and as tantalizing the talent is, was he going to make a difference in the playoffs last year?
Probably not.
But you know what? They were considering it because they didn't have any other options. Linus Karlsson paired a couple of games, right? And as soon as things weren't clicking with Besser and JT as much in certain games, and Pettersson wasn't going, and as good as, and then JT and Besser were having so much success, you don't want to break up that duo, especially with how they were matching up against the other team's top lines. You were kind of left in the wilderness if you were Pettersson. There was no answers in terms of trying to do something different.
Yeah.
now you have a lot of different things to try. And I think that's going to be part of this year too, is what's ultimately going to be the best mix by the time we get to the playoffs.
Let's quickly get to the Canucks Central roundup. I see a lot of texts coming in. We'll try to get to some of those, obviously, as soon as we can. Akito Hirose was back at practice. Pew Suter skated without his teammates, skated on his own. He remains day-to-day. So I think what we talked about earlier in the week about the Canucks starting to set up their roster as if they might have to start the season on LTIR, I think it still feels that way, but it now will depend on players staying healthy from tonight's game and also Pew Suter getting back and being available for Wednesday night's opener against Calgary.
Yeah, as far as the injury front is concerned, it's probably the best news you could have had today if you're looking to accrue cap space still for the beginning of the season. Because if Hirose is going to get cleared by next week, and we'll see, because he's back skating with a concussion, that doesn't mean he's, you know, fully in the clear yet, and it takes some time after that type of exercise to see where you're at, and hopefully it's positive. But if it is, and Suter is fine, then the Canucks could easily start the season under the salary cap and not have to utilize LTIR. That's ultimately, it just comes down to injuries.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's as good a news as you could have had if you're looking to accrue some space.
So that's the latest on that. Because this is the situation, there still could be a few maneuvers by the Canucks, obviously, with their roster before opening night, but it's going to depend on how all this plays out over the next few days.
So I think Phil DiGiuseppe's place here on with this team for opening night, I think, is going to be determined by whether they need LTI or not.
Yeah.
And I think a big reason why he went down was because of that.
Like, yeah.
Because if they had to go into LTIR, he had to go down. So you may as well sneak him down early.
Yeah.
And hopefully he got down, and that's what happened. And I think his status, like we mentioned the other week, if they need LTI, he's a casualty.
Yeah.
If they don't need LTI, he helps them because he helps them have a little bit more cap space.
All right. So that's the latest on that. Artur Shilov starting tonight against Edmonton, expected to get the full brunt of the game. So expect Shilov's in for tonight. We'll discuss this a little bit more. We have some goalie questions coming up in the mailbag, but, you know, along the lines of, like, what do you want to see from Artur Shilov's in tonight's matchup? We'll also get into that during the course of the pregame show. I did want to get in on a clip from JT Miller, but we have run out of time here in this segment, so we'll have to do that a little bit later on. You'll hear from JT Miller coming up after 5:30 in the pregame show and what he had to say after practice. The NHL season did start this afternoon with a game in Prague between the Devils beating the Sabres 4-1. Jacob Markstrom stonewalling Buffalo, looks good in his new threads, and I absolutely love it because Sabres fans were already pointing to the deserve to win a meter today and saying, we should have won this game. We play this way tomorrow. We win 6-1.
Well, they haven't had much to be optimistic about, Sabres fans, and I take what I can to begin the season. And watching some of the game, like, the Sabres had some good moments for sure. And we'll see how it goes.
And Tanner Pearson signs a one-year minimum deal with the Vegas Golden Knights. All their newfound cap space gets Tanner Pearson a new deal.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it doesn't matter. He signs a league minimum contract. Yeah, I saw people mentioning this, and I know you're joking, but they had contract slots anyways. Yeah. The Leonard situation had no bearing on this contract, but good for Tanner Pearson. Good to see him staying in the National Hockey League.
Introducing Seeker, Canada's new free app for your ears. Dive into live radio, captivating podcasts, the latest news and sports updates all in one place. Whether you're rediscovering music, debating last night's game, or laughing along with your favorite DJ, Seeker has you covered. Plus, there are some of the best prizes in the country up for grabs. It's all here in one easy-to-use app. Download Seeker for free from the App Store or Google Play. Seeker, seek your sounds. Find the radio, podcast, news, and sports you love. The Mailbag next on Canuck Central.